Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and where we broadcast from is not too far from where the eyes of the country are riveted on the spectacle of the Belmont Stakes and the possibility of a triple crown for California Chrome. And I kind of feel like California Chrome myself. I'm in the paddock and I'm stamping my feet and getting ready to head for the starting line. And I don't have my Breathe Right nasal strips on, but I'm loaded for bear, ready to go. Lots of information to share with you this hour. 888-302-3684. I hope it's as beautiful wherever you're listening to this program as it is here in the Northeast. And among the stories, we'll get to your calls momentarily. We have several. But before we do that, one of the big stories this week that has some vitamin aficionados in a tizzy has to do with vitamin E, and in particular, a type of vitamin E that we tend to think is a premium form of vitamin E, which is gamma-tocopherol vitamin E. And to break it down a little bit for you, vitamin E is not just vitamin E. There are many different types of vitamin E, and some of the cheap products are synthetic, what's called dry E, alpha-tocopherol acetate. It's a synthetic product, and there may be some value there, but it bears as little resemblance to the vitamin E that we get from food as, say, synthetic beta-carotene does to fresh fruits and vegetables. And that may be why some vitamin E research recently has come up short, suggesting that vitamin E is really not that beneficial for cardiovascular protection. Well, it depends on what type of vitamin E you're using. Although good old-fashioned D-alpha-tocopherol came up big in a recent Alzheimer's study where researchers used, get this, 2,000 international units of just old-fashioned generic D-alpha-tocopherol, not mixed tocopherol, no gamma-tocopherol. And they found that in individuals suffering from early signs of dementia, that they had a 30% improvement in their ability to take care of themselves over the course of the study. That's a dramatic impact and better than the vast majority of drugs, which we now throw at Alzheimer's disease. So vitamin E, you know, it will, even the vitamin E that may be the what we think is an inferior source of vitamin E may be useful, but gamma-tocopherol is one of the four tocopherols that make up vitamin E. Actually, vitamin E is a complex substance. There are eight different forms. There's four tocopherols and four tocotrienols. And the type that is most often sold is alpha-tocopherol. At least that is, quote, natural vitamin E. It's not synthetic, but only represents part of the spectrum. You know, sort of like, you know, a rainbow has all the different colors, and if you take part of the spectrum of a rainbow, you'll get yellow light or green light or blue light, but it's not the full spectrum. So full spectrum vitamin E is mixed tocopherols, including a generous amount of gamma tocopherol. That's what we get in our diets. But this week, big study, it grabbed a lot of attention, and I didn't see this, but even Dr. Oz reported on this, and unfortunately, uncritically passed along a lot of misinformation. Headline: vitamin E-rich oils linked to lung inflammation. According to a new sizable study by Northwestern Medicine, vitamin E-rich oils, including canola, soybean, and corn, could be contributing to the rising incidence of lung inflammation, airway hyperresponsiveness, and possibly asthma. In contrast, vitamin E-rich oils such as olive oil, wheat germ oil, almond, and sunflower oil improve lung capacity and function. And why is it that in this study, they say there's a difference, that some oils are beneficial for lung function and other oils are harmful? They say it's about gamma-tocopherol. They say that the gamma-tocopherol in these oils was responsible for promoting inflammation. I'm quoting, "This study is reported the first to link gamma-tocopherol with diminished lung function, poses us to question, how good are healthy oils for our health? High gamma-tocopherol levels in people consuming these oils was associated with a 10 to 17% reduction in lung function. Ergo, they say, don't take gamma-tocopherol. Now, we for a long time have felt that gamma tocopherol was a superior form of vitamin E, that oils which were unidimensional, containing just alpha tocopherol, actually blocked uptake of the valuable gamma tocopherol. And so we've been using mixed tocopherol in our formulas for a long time. Even my multivitamin has mixed tocopherol. I changed it several years ago, recognizing that the alpha tocopherol that I had in it wasn't state-of-the-art. So we use mixed tocopherol. The vitamin E that we sell at drhoffman.com is mixed tocopherol, rich in gamma tocopherol. So what's the problem with this study? Well, the problem with the study is, and I discussed this on our podcast Q&A with Layla, and actually we hadn't discussed it, but I sent her the article, and we both came to the same conclusion. The problem is, it's not the proportion of gamma tocopherol in the oil that's harmful. It's the oils themselves that are harmful. And there probably is precious little gamma tocopherol in something like a refined canola oil, right? And, you know, so it's not about the gamma tocopherol. It's about the oils themselves. So look at what the study says. It says that if you consume more canola, soybean, and corn oil, it's going to contribute to your lung inflammation. But if you consume more olive oil, wheat germ oil, almond, and sunflower oil, you'll improve your lung capacity and function. And they say, well, that's about the whether they have alpha tocopherol or gamma tocopherol. But no, it's about the oils themselves. We now know that omega-6 fatty acids promote inflammation. And canola oil, while it has some omega-3, it's soybean oil and corn, these represent a huge contribution to our omega-6 overdosing in the American diet. They're in everything. They're in salad dressings. They're in mayonnaise. They're in so many products. And our omega-3 to 6 ratio is adversely affected. More omega-3, less inflammation. More omega-6, more inflammation. Well, what about olive oil? Well, olive oil is not so much an omega-3 or omega-6 oil. It's a monounsaturated fat. But it's rich in polyphenols, which may have a lung protective effect. And so this study isn't much good to tell us whether the gamma tocopherol is harmful or not. It's jumping to unwarranted conclusions based on scant evidence. I quote for you from an article from Life Extension a couple of years back. What makes gamma tocopherol superior to alpha tocopherol? Gamma tocopherol has been found to reduce inflammation. It regulates factors that guard against certain cancers. It activates genes involved in protecting against Alzheimer's disease. It quenches inflammation, in short. So in this study, it said, well, more gamma tocopherol, that's the cause of the inflammation. No, it's not the cause of the inflammation. It's the carrier substance which brought the gamma tocopherol levels up a little bit in the bloodstream, not very much, far short of what would happen if you took a gamma tocopherol-rich supplement, that is the culprit, the carrier substances, poor quality oils, refined oils, that are rich in omega-6 in the American diet. And gamma tocopherol reduces inflammation by inhibiting COX-2 enzymes. That's the mechanism by which aspirin and nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs quench inflammation. Cardioprotective effects. Well, problems have been seen in terms of alpha tocopherol. It's come down on both sides of the equation. Some studies say yay, some studies say nay, but that's alpha tocopherol. Most studies looking at gamma tocopherol have shown that indeed there is an improvement. Numerous animal studies show that gamma tocopherol may provide powerful protection for the heart. Researchers now recommend, and there's a growing trend for them to say, don't just use alpha tocopherol. Here's what some top researchers say. Dr. Stephen Christen of the University of California, Berkeley, contends that consumers taking vitamin E supplements containing an imbalance of the two principal forms of vitamin E are depriving themselves of the protective value afforded by a mixture of tocopherols. He has found that gamma tocopherol possesses distinctive and protective biochemical properties not seen in alpha tocopherol and can play an important role in limiting cell damage and disarming toxic metabolites like peroxynitrate, nitrogen dioxide, NO2. And he and other scientists contend that vitamin E supplements should contain a ratio of alpha tocopherol to gamma tocopherol that's closer to what's found in nature. Johns Hopkins scientists recommend 20% of supplemental vitamin E be in the form of gamma tocopherol. Other researchers have gone further. Researchers at Berkeley just this year have proposed a 50-50 blend of alpha tocopherol and gamma tocopherol. So, yeah, once again, poor science trumps reason and gets in the way of people implementing proper self-care measures. And we're here at Intelligent Medicine to help set the record straight. If you care to listen to the podcast of my discussion with Layla Mutin, it's available at drhoffman.com, Q&A with Layla. We do that feature each and every week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
This traffic report from the bloodstream brought to you by Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Well, that inbound blood flow is really slowing down now due to plaque from cholesterol, but help's on the way from Kyolic. More than 750 peer-reviewed research studies indicate that Kyolic not only keeps circulation moving smoothly, it also helps improve a number of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is made from 100% organically grown garlic, is completely odorless, and won't upset your stomach. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Look for Kyolic at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Help keep your system stay humming along with Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract today.
Whether you are getting ready for a once-in-a-lifetime vacation, flying to a business meeting, or just visiting friends, don't risk ruining your trip by neglecting to protect your digestive health. Pack award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, one of the best lines of defense against traveler's tummy. Dr. O'Hara's convenient blister packs are portable and never need to be refrigerated, perfect for traveling. Backed by over 25 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics use 12 strains of live, beneficial bacteria, combined in a centuries-old Japanese fermentation process. The result is a superior supplement that enhances immunity and digestion, which helps reduce the risk of getting sick while traveling. Stay healthy while traveling and remember to pack your probiotics. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics.
Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We got lots of callers, but for those of you who are too shy to get on the air with me live, or if you want to just pose a question that we'll answer for you on our podcast, we do about 4 to 5 hours of additional content during the week, and these podcasts can be accessed at drhoffman.com. Just send us an email to radioprogram@aol.com. You'll have to listen to the podcast Q&A with Layla to hear the answer to your question, but we'll tackle your question. Email to radioprogram@aol.com. And no, we won't just send you an answer because I just can't keep up with the volume of questions. But we will use your question as fodder for our discussion on Q&A with Layla during the week. All right, Shelley, welcome.
Dr. Hoffman, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure, Shelley.
I have a very mysterious weight loss problem of 12 pounds. I've been down to 86 pounds for 2 years now.
Shelley, can I ask you how old you are?
77,
okay.
It started after I was put on an injectable drug for osteoporosis, which I discontinued after 5 months, but I have never been able to gain back the weight no matter how much food I eat. Now, frequent blood tests are always normal. A recent CAT scan of the abdomen, endoscopy are completely normal. Dr. Yep. Hoffman, I don't know where to turn. Can you possibly offer any advice how I can try to get a diagnosis?
Sure. Well, and I often say this, it's sometimes more difficult to put weight onto people than to get people to lose weight because there are myriad causes of weight loss. And one, the reason I asked your age is that it's people who pass a certain age, they bifurcate into two camps. Usually they get fat, flabby, and overweight. But about 20% of people become frail past a certain age. This is called sarcopenia. And it's hard to stave off because part of it comes from less efficient absorption and part of it comes from a decline in hormones. And so that's why we have all these ridiculous drinks being pushed at older Americans, like Boost and Ensure, which, according to a recent study, are nothing more than you know, liquid candy. Basically, they're full of poor quality sugary calories that are designed to fatten you up like a Strasbourg goose, but ultimately don't do you a solid, because you can become diabetic, and you know, the vitamins are very, very scanty in those. All right, so you know, we, in order to figure out what's going on with you, we would have to do some tests. Obviously, the big C is a concern, but you've been worked up. And that's, you know, when you see weight loss, the first thing doctors look at is, what's the most dangerous possibility? Oh, my God, a person's lost so much weight. Do they have, God forbid, pancreatic cancer or something like that? This can be a harbinger of that. Well, so far they haven't found that, thank God. But you may have malabsorption due to, you may have acquired a gluten intolerance. You may have some sort of intestinal imbalance, a dysbiosis. I'm not sure how that fits into the osteoporosis drug you took, but sometimes changes can occur when you take any medication. Usually, you know, antibiotics might be more likely to trigger a change in your intestinal balance. But we would check to see if you're malabsorbing. We would measure levels of nutrients. It's fairly easy to see a malabsorption pattern if you do enough tests. You can be tested for small intestine bacterial overgrowth, which will also mess up your absorption, or you know, leaky gut, various abnormalities of the intestinal wall that's responsible for absorbing nutrients. Sometimes the use of certain hormones can be helpful. If you're 77, you might have a very low level of androgens. We don't so much like to give testosterone to older women unless it's part of balanced hormone replacement. But DHEA is permissible in both sexes, and it can promote healthy weight gain and improvement of appetite. So are there, you know, magic measures to increase up? Have you, by the way, have you found that you are eating less, or are you just eating a lot? And
I'm eating a lot, doctor.
Okay, and you're not having like diarrhea, gastric disturbances, stomach problems?
Well, irritable bowel syndrome.
Ah, bingo. So something's going on in the GI tract, and it's not clear what, but it does suggest that.
But the,
it's not,
but the CAT scan and the endoscopy, wouldn't that show up some
no,
problem?
No, no. You know, listen. You sound like a typical patient who comes to see me at the Hoffman Center, because we actually, in cases like this, I mean, we would insist that you get a complete GI workup. And then at the end of that, often, you know, if that were a way to fix or diagnose problems like you, I would never see a patient, because, you know, these are sort of gross ways to determine if something really serious is going on. But to detect subtle abnormalities, it requires a different approach. And sometimes a trial of diet modification, looking at foods that are better absorbed. I mean, I can tell you just, you know, off the cuff that sometimes people are on very virtuous diets. They're eating lots and lots of salads, very healthy foods, plenty of fruits and vegetables. And sometimes that's a little, you know, that may be a virtuous diet for a person who's trying to maintain or lose weight. But for a person who's underweight, you may want to eat a lower residue diet, concentrate on healthy sources of fat like coconut oil, which is a very easily absorbed medium-chain triglyceride, eating more easily digested protein, maybe digestive enzymes or some additional hydrochloric acid may help your situation. Those are some of the considerations. And, you know, you need to check your thyroid, too. If you have a hyperactive thyroid,
no,
that can also cause you to lose
weight. No, I just had the test. It's fine.
I presume you did. But sometimes, you know, the test can be, there can be a subtle abnormality that can be missed. But, you know, it sounds like, unfortunately, you're at the point where you need to do some good trial and error, you know, make yourself a science fair project and try some different things, or else get some coaching from a nutritionally oriented practitioner who can perform some tests and suggest some things for you to do. It's an interesting dilemma, but it's not something that's unfamiliar to us. As people age, their digestive capacity declines, their hormones decline, and they have sarcopenia, which is like a sort of a wasting syndrome, which leads to frailty. Very common problem. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. When we return, we're going to take on the vitamin naysayers. There's some significant blowback from nutrition experts about the debate over the value of vitamins and mineral supplements. They say that it's far from over. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh.
Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We invite your phone calls, 888-302-3684. And Carol, welcome.
Dr. Hoffman, I'm 83 years old.
Yes.
At the age of 31, I was postmenopausal.
Mm-hmm. Had menopause by 31? You had a very early menopause, right?
Actually, I had endometriosis. They removed my left ovary. It had not functioned for 5 years. That was at the age of 26.
Okay.
And most of my right ovary. But they left some ovarian tissue.
Okay.
And then at the age of 31, right after I gave birth to our son,
I became menopausal
and I developed rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, my goodness.
My rheumatologist had my estrogen level checked. It was zero. He said that never happens.
Well, that's clearly, I mean, that is actually what, we'll just pause for a moment. Carol, this is what happens sometimes when women go into hormone withdrawal, like a real crash of their hormones at the time of menopause. They're much more prone to inflammation, inflammatory problems like rheumatoid arthritis. So this is actually something we'd look for at the time of menopause. But that's not what you're calling. You got something more contemporary, because this is sort of taking us into the 1960s, I have a feeling, and we're well past that.
Actually, I was just recently diagnosed with invasive lobular carcinoma in my left breast. I opted for a double mastectomy.
Wait a minute. You were how old and you opted for a double mastectomy at what age?
83.
83. See, this, I got to say, this speaks to a controversy that I talked about last hour, which is the current, I think, medical fad to have double mastectomy and even have prophylactic. And there's prophylactic. In other words, it's not cancer, but on the risk of cancer, you have both your breasts taken off. Or alternatively, as Angelina Jolie is about to do, you have a prophylactic oophorectomy. You have your ovaries taken out. And, you know, I got to say that it is very scary to have a BRCA gene or to have family members who have breast cancer, to have precancerous lesions in your breast or suspicious changes. But, you know, I just wonder about the decision of someone in their 80s where cancer can be slow developing and possibly less aggressive to have such a drastic procedure undertaken. I know that, you know, perhaps at 83 there's less of a concern about the cosmetic implications of that. It's not like you're dating or about to get married. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, I think we're sometimes overzealous about things like that. I hate to say it.
Well, actually, with the biopsy, the cancer was in all four quadrants of the breast.
Okay.
And
all right. So your question is not about that, because we've already been there, done that. I'm just commenting on that phenomenon. So you have a question about diet, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
My question is, how do you feel about, I did not want to take tamoxifen because they suggested that, and I said no.
Right.
I wanted to go on bioidentical hormone, and I also wanted to take the non-GMO soy protein, and I wanted your opinion on that.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, to get bioidentical hormones after a diagnosis of breast cancer is, of course, a controversial proposition. There are some who say, and Suzanne Summers leads the pack on this, although she has, it's not like she's making this up. There's actually some medical support for the notion of using estrogen as an anti-cancer substance. Certain natural forms of estrogen may suppress cancer. But I would say, look, I mean, you've gone to the trouble of having a double mastectomy and you want to prevent cancer, and then going on estrogen, I'm not sure what that's going to do for you. You don't have any breast tissue anymore. So the chances of getting a recurrence of breast cancer, fairly nil, unless you want the health benefits of being on hormone replacement therapy. I wouldn't bother.
Benefits, because as soon as I stopped taking the Premarin after the diagnosis.
So you've been taking Premarin, you've been taking artificial estrogen,
yes.
And then you develop breast cancer. Okay. So then you've had terrible symptoms, you've been feeling awful with withdrawal from this?
The rheumatoid arthritis flared up.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that's a really interesting story that you have. I would have to, you would challenge me in a one-hour consultation in the office. There is some rationale for putting you on hormone replacement therapy, even at the age of 83, because it may help to suppress the inflammation of your rheumatoid arthritis. There is something to be said for that. Would soy help? Well, soy, taking soy and hormone replacement therapy, soy may have additional benefits, but it's a little bit like spitting into a hurricane. The estrogen that you're getting from the bioidentical hormones would be much stronger and, have a more definitive effect than, say, the non-GMO soy. The soy is okay to take. And by the way, some studies show that soy consumption after breast cancer is somewhat preventive of recurrence. This has been a big debate because some women are petrified of soy. They say, well, I have breast cancer and soy is estrogenic, so is it going to make my cancer come back? On the contrary, it may have a slight preventive effect. It doesn't seem to matter very much, but if anything, it weighs towards prevention. You're complicated, Carol, and I think there is a rationale for you to take bioidentical hormones. Your breast tissue is gone. There's less danger of any problems. I think, after breast cancer, the doctor's very scared to give any kind of estrogen. But in your case, the advantage may be that it may suppress your arthritis. I say it's a very, very interesting call because it brings up a lot of issues in terms of natural care and the use of bioidentical hormones. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and when we return, we invite your questions. We got more people on the line. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. A few weeks ago, we tackled head-on a series of articles that appeared in the Archives of Internal Medicine suggesting that, and I'm using their words, enough is enough. It's time to end the controversy about supplements because they are worthless, and we ought to move on because this is not a worthwhile field of inquiry, and that the vast majority of Americans are simply wasting their money on useless nostrums that have little impact on their health and that might in fact be dangerous for them. This is a big, big, made a big impact in the media, but lots of you are skeptical and you're going to stick to your guns. Here's a retort, a statement that pushes back against the assertion that enough is enough, game over, supplements aren't worth their salt. It's by nutrition experts from Oregon State University, the Children's Hospital at Oakland Research Institute, Tufts University, and the Harvard School of Public Health. And one of their chief spokesperson is a gifted researcher named Dr. Baltz Frey. German name, Dr. Baltz Frey, who is Professor Emeritus and Director of the Linus Pauling Institute. He's a biochemist at OSU College of Science. He says, quote, "It's naive to ignore the fact that most people have micronutrient inadequacies and wrong to condemn a daily supplement that could cover these nutritional gaps safely and at low cost." He continues, there's strong evidence that a multivitamin mineral supplement supports normal functioning of the body and helps improve overall health and may even help lower chronic disease risk. And he continues, it's irresponsible to ignore decades of nutrition research and to tell the people of the United States they have no need for a supplement that could be so helpful and may cost just a few dollars a month. He says, and if they have a poor diet, people should try to improve that as well. The two are not mutually exclusive. So one of the things that vitamin critics continually raise is say, well, the vitamins give people a false sense of security. They think, oh, if I just take this vitamin, I can continue smoking, I can eat a crappy diet, eat junk food, stop exercising. How many people do you know who are like that? The vast majority of you who listen to the show, I admit it, this is a specialty show. It's a destination show for people who are health conscious. But the vast majority of you are working on all fronts to optimize your health. You're eating the best diet you can. 99% of you have stopped smoking. You're attempting, at least sometimes more successfully than others, to undertake an exercise program. So, you know, the notion that vitamins and supplements disincentivize people from leading healthy lifestyles, that's nuts. More points made in the statement. The vast majority of people in the United States do not meet all of the guidelines for dietary intake of vitamins and minerals. More than 93% of adults in the U.S. do not get the estimated average requirement of vitamins D and E from their diet. 61% don't get enough magnesium, and 50% not enough vitamin A and calcium. And many subpopulations have even more critical needs for micronutrients. In other words, you could do studies and say, well, the vast unwashed multitude, okay, maybe you're not going to see an effect. But if you look at certain subpopulations, they need more of certain critical nutrients. And he names specifically older adults, African Americans. By the way, stark statistic, among African Americans, 1 in 3 African American men will develop prostate cancer. And among Caucasians, it's 1 in 5. There is a big discrepancy between vitamin D levels between Caucasians who are light-skinned and absorb UV rays from the sun better than dark-skinned individuals who may not even want to bother to spend time in the sun because their skin's, you know, nice and dark and tanned already. But it's been shown that vitamin D deficiency dramatically increases the risk for certain cancers. So that's a subpopulation that might be a target for, at the very least, vitamin D supplementation. Obese persons and some people who are ill or injured, people with various types of medical conditions, Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, inflammatory disorders, cancer. Concerns about increased mortality from supplements of vitamin A and E, I'm reading from the statement, have been based on extremely high use through supplements far beyond the amount available in a multivitamin. In the case of vitamin E, largely refuted by comprehensive meta-analyses. So they're saying, you know, the pushback against vitamin E is misguided. Mostly they use synthetic vitamin E or they use simply alpha tocopherol. The vitamin A studies use synthetic beta carotene, not full spectrum mixed carotenoids. They say that one of the largest controlled studies ever done in the United States, called the Physicians Health Study, found a significant 8% reduction in total cancer incidence in male physicians who took a multi. And what did they take? They essentially took kind of a crappy multi. They took Centrum. And Centrum, you know, tries to advertise that fact that there is a reduced incidence of cancer in people who, in men, who take the Centrum, which is a lot of, you know, sort of bottom rung ingredients, but does provide at least a smattering of the ingredients you need for protection. And there was a significant reduction in the incidence of cancer. So, you know, lots of reasons to push back. I've enumerated many of them. But now we have the full weight of the scientific community pushing back against the premature conclusion that supplements are without value, enough is enough, let's silence the debate, pack it in. For sure, that's not the case. All right. When we return, more of your phone calls. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman on Intelligent Medicine.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
And indeed, a good newsletter it was this week because I rolled out a new article on 4 additional drugs to avoid. It's a... It's a companion piece to previous articles I've written, 12 drugs to avoid at all costs. But there are four more, and you can check them out at drhoffman.com or subscribe to our newsletter, because we get lots of useful information out your way via the newsletter. Let's talk now to Andrea. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. The reason I'm calling, I recently had a blood test, and my vitamin D level was terribly low. It was the first time I had it tested. I have two questions. The doctor said there's no difference between vitamin D2 and 3, and I've read that there are huge differences. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I am very, very allergic to many different foods, and I spent an entire day going to various pharmacies, and literally every container has something in it that I'm quite allergic to.
Right.
And I do want to get started. I do want to take the vitamin D, and I'm really in a quandary.
Okay. Well, actually, you know, I was just talking about the drugs to avoid, and in my first series of 12 drugs to avoid, I list prescription vitamin D2 as one of the drugs to avoid. And that's it. Doctors now are attuned to the vitamin D issue, but their response is often wrong. They'll see a patient like you has an abysmally low vitamin D, and they'll say, well, I'll just prescribe some vitamin D. And that vitamin D, they say, is the same as the vitamin D you find in a health food store. But there's actually a difference. Vitamin D2, or ergocalciferol, is made from mushrooms. It's actually kind of it's interesting. Is if you take a mushroom and you put it under a UV light or leave it out in the sun, it'll get a tan, just like a human. And it will beef up its vitamin D levels. So I guess we have something in common with mushrooms, so the vitamin D that you get as D3 is cholecalciferol. It's actually derived from lanolin, or sheep's wool. They don't harm the sheep. They just shear them. They use the wool for clothing, and they extract the lanolin for various types of cosmetic products, but also for the vitamin D content. And the vitamin D3 is actually superior to vitamin D2. It's more bioavailable by about a factor of 50%, according to some studies. Plus, it's thought that vitamin D2 may suppress the production of vitamin D3. And so vitamin D3 is really a preferable form of it. The vast majority of stuff at health food stores is vitamin D3, although some vegetarian forms of vitamin D are the ergocalciferol form in health food stores, mostly not. I'm going to say 98% of the vitamin D you get from health food store sources, in contradistinction to the med, are D3. And you can get very, very pure sources of vitamin D, because it's a very... you don't need excipients, colorings, wheat flour, cornstarch in your vitamin D pill. You know, so look for a very pure source. You can take drops or you can take capsules. It's actually, in my opinion, it's not that important, because D is a commodity. D is D. It's a matter of, how's it packaged, if there's additives or colorings or, carnauba wax or things like that on the capsules. That you'd have to look out for. I think you'll do fine. And I actually prescribe 50,000 international units of vitamin D3 to some of my patients who are very low. And it makes a big difference, 50,000 once a week. But you got to be careful. Can't take too much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a great weekend. And go California Chrome. This is Intelligent Medicine.